Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of the Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Chad, guys! Hey, Chad, let me in!
Keep an eye on him, Pip!
Chad! Hey, guys, Chad, let me in!
Who are you?
Chris Moore, Capitol Records, A&R. Come on, let me in.
I told you, man, things are going our way.
Take a few steps back from the door. You tossed me some ID.
Hey, hey.
All right, man, so how'd you find us?
The cops told me you guys are looking for a record contract. There's something going on here we got to take immediate advantage of, guys. Yeah. Come on, let's talk, huh?
Yeah, what's that?
What's that?
Will you look? This is hot. You guys are the hottest thing since Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch.
Marky Mark? Man, that guy sucks.
Okay, forget Marky Mark. There's magic out here, guys. Let's talk contracts. I promise you, someday we're going to be backstage at the Forum laughing about this.
All right, let me ask you a question. What side are you taking the big David Lee Roth Van Halen split?
What do you mean?
What kind of question is that?
What side did you take, Halen or Roth?
Van Halen.
He's a cop.
Oh, come
later,
on, guys.
Oink, oink.
Oh, strictly a judgment call. They sold a lot of records after Dave left the group. Come on, one more question. Hey, come on, Jazz, one more.
Right.
Who'd win in a wrestling match, Lemmy or God?
Lemmy.
Ah!
God.
Wrong, dickhead. Trick question. Lemmy is God.
Good afternoon to you. It is 31 minutes after the hour of one, and this is the month of March of the year of our Lord 2011. Thank you for drawing near that ye might be amused, informed, entertained, and made a fuller, richer, more rounded person and individual. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program coming to you live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milkpacking district here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon, the home of all good things. It is Wednesday, and welcome to day 12. It is March 30th. 2011. I am here along with Don Taylor, and if you'd like to interact with us telephonically, you can do so. It is 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick at rickemerson.com. That is rick at rickemerson.com. Don Taylor can be emailed. It's Don, D-A-W-N, at rickemerson.com. You can also text us via the website, or you can contact us via Skype. It's Rick Emerson Show. That is our Skype username. Rick Emerson Show. Later on this hour, we're going to talk to Mr. Aaron Mesh, screen editor from Willamette Week. Aaron Mesh coming up sometime within the next half an hour or so. Also got a taser watch coming up today, clown watch coming up today, and a job watch. Now, those are all on the way. That's just in this one show. It's astounding. I mean, it leaves the mind reeling and the gog, really. It leaves you staggered. It leaves you gobsmacked. So the Taser Watch, Clown Watch, Job Watch coming in. Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week and all of that. It is 503-505-6964. If you're really lucky, by the way, at a slack moment during the program, you get to hear Dawn masticate what is left of her cheeseburger. Or is it all gone?
All gone.
No side dishes today?
No.
Okay. All right. Just checking. What kind of cheeseburger was it?
It was a Swiss and mushroom burger.
Oh, I hate you.
From Mike's Drive-In.
Okay. I don't really remember the last thing I ate. I'm trying to remember. Here's the thing about the last couple of days, and we'll talk more about this in just a second. But for the last few days, we've been filling in for Mr. Bob Miller over on KPAM, AM 860. So we were there 7 to 11 Monday, Tuesday, and then today, Wednesday. And, you know, I just, you know, like Greg and Sarah, like a lot of people, I got a lot of stuff going on, just many irons in the fire. And as I said this morning, a lot, not so much spinning plates, just spinning many little saucers in a variety of mugs and cutlery and so forth. So I just, you know, Not a lot of time to sleep, but that's okay. Fine. That's what that's what my golden years are for. So you just, you know, just find yourself in these situations where you got to go from A to B to Q to Z to D to F to Z. You know, different sections of the city, just doing all these, you know, these different jobs and different whatever. Working on, you know, the project. So as a result, just haven't been getting, you know, like large sections of sleep. And I think Keith Richards was the one who described this, and he really is the authority. He's the gold standard on this sort of thing. Where when you're getting a normal amount of sleep and you're having, you know, what they call a schedule, where you're waking up, you're doing some stuff, you're going to bed, repeat, your brain sort of compartmentalizes. And you have segments for Monday, one for Tuesday, one for you know, one for maybe Saturday morning, one for maybe after brunch. But when you find yourself staying up for a long period of time, in your head, it's just one big compartment that goes all the way back for like 5 days, which makes it it would be like taking all of your things at home in various drawers and closets and cupboards and armoires and just putting them in one box in the middle of your living room. And then just saying, hold on, where are my tweezers? Well, they're in this huge box with all these 9 million other things. So that's kind of how my thoughts are the last couple of days, because, it's just, you know, sort of one huge compartment of time. You know, in which dwells Kronos and, you know, and 7 billion observations that have all just started stacking up there like so much unopened mail. Anywho, so we'll talk more about all that in just a second. In addition to everything I just discussed, Don Taylor is tracking the following headlines for your edification on this Wednesday.
The Oregon House endorsed the Code of the West.
Did they endorse that?
They endorsed the Code of the West.
It's the best day ever.
Las Vegas has opened a new attraction devoted to the mob. And vacuum cleaner designer James Dyson says that Chinese students are stealing secrets from British schools.
It's a modern Chinese secret. Well, it's not even a Chinese secret. It's a Dyson secret.
Modern Chinese that secret.
That doesn't even really work, but it's still funny. It makes me laugh. All right, that is all coming up. We'll talk to Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. We'll have a Taser Watch coming up, Clown Watch coming up, Job Watch coming up, and more and so forth. Don't forget, tonight is Justified, which I actually forgot about until you mentioned it to me, because, again, it's like I can't really tell what day it is right now.
Yeah.
And so tonight, Justified, Mr. Timothy Olyphant is Joelle Carter. Big fan of ours, she is. That is tonight, 10 o'clock on FX, so you really ought to be watching that. You know what else I'm watching right now? Our friend Siegfried recommended this to me. I'm watching this show called House of Cards, which is a BBC. They call it a miniseries. I mean, the BBC themselves call it a miniseries, but it's like, what's the difference? Because it's like 12 installments. So, I mean, it's effectively a TV series. I mean, it doesn't really... but it's the reason that it came to my attention, he pointed it out because Kevin Spacey just optioned it with David Fincher. It's going to be the first original programming by Netflix. They're going to remake it for American audiences, and it's going to stream. It's going to be a brand new original television series. And get this. It's amazing. Netflix is really becoming a power player. I mean, I love Netflix and all, and I've been a subscriber for a long time, but it's astounding. Netflix is going to create this original television series produced by Kevin Spacey, directed, you know, co-produced and then occasionally directed by David Fincher. They're going to stream it directly to your TV. And they actually, Netflix, not only did they pick up the option, because I guess Fincher and Spacey have been shopping it around for a while because they love the BBC original. They wanted to adapt it for the States. Not only did Netflix offer to pick it up, Netflix actually gave them a 2-season order of episodes.
Wow.
But it's
Netflix really, really... I admire the way they have managed to stay ahead of the curve on everything. You know, they could have just... It could have been one of those things where, we mail you the DVDs, and then they get passed by other technology.
Well, then Blockbuster could have gone, we'll just do the same thing and surpass them.
Well, and then somebody else could have started doing the getting the jump on them with the streaming or something.
They obviously had like a 10-year plan, I think, from the get-go. House of Cards is a really, really great miniseries and all the way through it, but it is it's a strange show, and it's sort of an unsettling program. It takes place in 1990 after the series, after the passing of Margaret Thatcher, in this sort of... It's one of those shows that it takes place in the real world, but it's sort of an alternate, not an alternate reality, but it's sort of like how things could have gone. But it takes place after the passing of Margaret Thatcher, and it is about a cabinet minister, effectively a secretary of state, who contrives through a series of political manipulations and machinations to become the leader of England. And he's a very Machiavellian character. And again, it takes place in the modern time, 1991, I think. But the really great device is that throughout the series... I actually kind of get chills thinking about him. I forget the name of the actor, but he's very British, you know, and very proper and whatever. But throughout the series, he actually speaks to the camera, cluing you in as to how he's going to manipulate the voters and the process and the system and the political people and the politicians around him to eventually obtain the highest office in the land. Hmm. And he's, you know, and he says, for example, there's someone who works for the Prime Minister's office who has a cocaine problem. And at one point, the character does that thing of turning to the camera, and he says, I'm surrounded by human frailty and weakness. Very unsettling and disappointing, although it can be useful from time to time. And then he turns back, and he effectively blackmails the guy into being a mole for him. And so Siegfried described it as, if Josiah Bartlett had been completely evil, because he puts on a sort of just folks face for the people.
Oh, yeah.
But then he's utterly and totally... They're not even evil, just sort of amoral about obtaining power. Anyway, it's a great series. And so apparently Fincher and Spacey are going to make that the first direct from Netflix series. Two seasons they got to deal for here in America. So anyway.
And if it's good Admiral Spacey who's doing like good work.
If it's Social Network, not 21.
Yeah, if it's not creepy, scenery-chewing, grandstanding, look at me, you're giving Spacey.
Look how hard I'm acting.
I'm acting all over the place.
If it's not,
I'm just splattering acting all over you.
If it's not Pay It Forward, Spacey.
Ugh.
Yeah, you know the Spacey that I should hate.
I used to love him so much.
I still do, but I recognize that he just makes bad choices or just is blinded by money. You know the Spacey that I should hate, but I don't. Is Life of David Gale Spacey?
Yeah. Did you see Beyond the Sea?
Yes.
Yeah, that movie is just crazy.
Yeah.
That is. When you hear the words vanity project, the bar is beyond the sea.
Yeah.
And in it, he is intermittently brilliant. And then the whole thing is just such a big, messy train wreck.
It's a big wank job, too.
It's so awful.
Yeah.
And it's so just patently just about him going, look, I can do Bobby Darin.
I'm singing.
And that's it. Yeah. And it's awful.
Yeah. I wanted to like it, too.
But it's just so aggressively awful that you actually kind of like it because it's just so ill-conceived and dumb.
Well.
That, like, no, like, at somebody, someone could have said, Mr. Spacey, no.
Now, see, but I don't, but he was at that point where he was coming off an Academy Award win. And he was like America's favorite, whatever. And he did American Beauty. And
you know, I want to see more of those things. Like we had talked about Sylvester Stallone's dream.
Wanted to be Edgar Allan Poe.
It's just him going, that's it. I'm doing it. I'm doing Poe. And like no matter what anyone says, it's like, no, I'm making the Poe movie. I want to see more actors do that.
I'm wholeheartedly in favor of that idea. Rick Emerson is a huge, huge fan of that idea. The thing about Beyond the Sea is I know that Spacey been trying to make that for like 15 years. And all, you know, and so it's like, A, he was, you know, too old to play the part, but he was like, screw it. I'm not going to give it up now. Now that I finally got the power to do it and the money to do it and they'll let me do it, I'm going to do it. But then also, even if he realized at some point, like, well, this is crap. I'm just making doggerel over here. He must have been like, the principle of the thing is such. He's like, well, even if he just went to the set one day and went, wait a minute. This is a waste of everyone's time. This is horrible. At that point, it's like you're pot committed, you know? He must have been like, I owe it. Not just to Bobby Darin. He must have said, like, I owe it to the Kevin Spacey of 15 years ago to, like, actually do it, you know? He must have just... I mean, I like to think that anyway because it was just crap. It was so bad.
I just want there to be more things like that. Like, you know, Jeremy Irons says, I am going to play Buffalo Bill Cody and no one can stop me.
Tom Arnold is Martina Navratilova.
Yes.
That's awesome. Well, you need to see more movies, Dawn. You need to fund these sorts of things. That's really... They're not going to pay for themselves.
No.
We did headlines, yes?
We did indeed.
Okay. I don't remember any of them, but I'm assuming they were awesome. It's been one of those weeks. And here's the thing. I mentioned this, let me just back up and say. So we finished our third morning over at KPAM today, filling in for Mr. Bob Miller. And we want to thank him and everybody at KPAM for being really gracious and allowing us to come in and wreck the joint and just splatter foolishness all over their walls. So thanks.
I don't have as much experience in the radio industry, obviously, as you do. I mean, who does, really?
Well, no.
But I have to say I don't know what I was expecting. I certainly didn't expect people to be just actively rude to us or anything. But
hello, Dawn.
They were all really nice to us.
Yeah.
And I had a very nice time with everyone we worked with.
Here's the thing about it. In my experience, every radio station is basically just sort of a... it's just a melange. It's a melting pot of just, you know, Every radio show is like everything else. You know, you get a few people who are really, really nice, some people who are real dicks, and then everybody else is just, you know, kind of a person. They're just sort of there. And the reason for that is, regardless of ideology, if it's a left-wing station, right-wing station, music station, talk station, it doesn't really matter, because everybody gets fired so many times and goes to work at every other radio station in town. Radio station employees are like marbles in a game of hungry, hungry hippos. And it's just a question of, like, where you happen to land. Oh, I guess it's the pink one today. You know, and it's like you're working. And so it doesn't, you can't. Here's a little trade secret from me to you, and I'm not talking, and I really honestly am not speaking about anybody in particular. I am not thinking of anybody in particular when I say this, and I mean that. When you hear somebody on a radio station who seems to be like a real fire-breathing liberal or a fire-breathing conservative or whatever, you know, I've mentioned before how that's a lot of, you know, show business and carnival barkerism, and it's that. But also, when you meet somebody like that who does like some like really, really like out there, like edgy right-wing show or left-wing show, they're never like that in person. Because really, when all is said and done, the bottom line is they're just some other radio guy that has been fired like 1,000 times in their life, and you know, and just, and so they all have that same kind of bearing. And when they interact with other radio people, it's like any industry. Newspaper people who worked in newspapers a lot, there's a certain way they talk to other newspaper people, because only you guys have that shared experience. Actors talk to other actors in a certain way because you have the shared experience. Radio people, you know, they talk to you, you know, in a certain way because you are also a radio person. And it's like, and it's just, and so you'll find that they're just, most people are just sort of room temperature. They're just not one way or the other. They're just, you know, like everything else. They're just sort of there trying to do it, you know, trying to learn to live their life. So they were nice. It was a fine experience.
Yeah.
So last night I get done. So we did the Bob Miller Show Monday, then Legion of News, this show, rinse, wash, repeat Tuesday. And then last night, I get done here. I leave at like 5. I go home doing some stuff, thinking, I had to take a nap. Ended up not taking a nap. And, of course, it's because I had to be downtown at Dante's at 10 o'clock to be on the Ed Foreman Show, which is this sort of live, you know, faux kind of zany talk show that happens on stage. And, Ed and Aaron Ross, who's the guy who portrays Ed Foreman. Aaron Ross, he's a good guy. You know, I like him a lot. And some of the other cast members are listeners, been listeners for a long time. So, you know, and Cheryl was like, hey, you know, he invited. And to be fair, he'd already canceled once, or I'd already canceled once. He'd asked Greg and I to come on. Greg couldn't go because he had a Blazers thing. I canceled, and then I postponed. And so it's like I couldn't do that again because Greg, you know, wasn't able to do it, and then I pushed it back twice. So it's like I had to do it, and then it ended up being last night. So I asked Cheryl, I said, so, like, I'm going to go down there at 10 o'clock, right? And she's like, let me double check. She double checks. Comes back, goes, yeah, he should be here at 10 o'clock. I'm like, 10 o'clock? 10 o'clock p.m. Pacific time. That's when I need to be there. She's like, yeah, he says 10 o'clock to be, you know, and that's what he said. You know, he's just like, be there at 10. I'm like, okay, all right. So I don't nap. I just go there. I go to Dante's. I walk in, and of course, there's just, you know, just the stench of booze and, you know, and sadness and video poker. And I'm sitting there answering my email. 10, 10:15, 10:20, 10:40, 10:55. 11:10, 11:25, 11:30, the show finally begins. Begins at 11:30. And that's the thing where you're looking at your watch and you go, well, this doesn't even seem possible. Christ, I have to be awake in 5.5 hours. How does that... That's not even... That, how does it even work? And then it's like... And I was sending Cheryl this, like, just sort of, like, texting her just, like, what was happening. I'm like... Now there's a Pee Wee Herman impersonator on stage. Because before his show starts, there's a whole series of stand-up comics.
Oh, Lord.
And so there's a stand-up comic whose deal is that he's a Pee Wee Herman impersonator. Because that's what you want to see. And that's just sad. The idea that you would be there watching a guy whose shtick is that he's a Pee Wee Herman. And it's not like he's doing a satire of Pee Wee Herman or a send-up, as though that's even possible. He's just flat out he's like a Pee Wee Herman cover band. He's in the suit and the thing and the, you know, and it's just, and, you know, and that's it. And I was just watching this going, why? Why does this exist? Why is this happening? Best moment last night. Here's the best moment of the entire thing is they're doing this horrible series of stand-up comedians. And one of the comics on stage just goes, between jokes, he goes, so I was molested when I was a kid. I guess that's not very funny, though. And then he just kind of trailed off into nothing.
God.
I immediately texted that show. I'm like, shuck up what this guy on stage just said. It was insane. So then, the Pee Wee Herman guy comes out and does his thing. Then they start the actual show, which, you know, and again, I don't mean to knock those guys. I'm really not knocking them. It's just, you know, it is what it is. It's a late night faux talk show done by a guy who's sort of in character as a sort of belligerent, hilarious drunk. But for an audience of people who are just sauced, Several listeners were there, by the way. I got a message from this morning, so I'm not knocking the audience either. I mean, look, drunks need entertainment too. You know, and humor for the drunk is not necessarily like humor for everybody else. I get that. So I got that, you know, and went and did my thing, and I got to bed at, I don't know, like 2:30, something like that. And so then it's like the thing where the alarm went off this morning. I went to bed at 2:30. The alarm goes off at 5. So after 2.5 hours of sleep, the alarm goes off, and it was that thing where I think I just looked at him and I went, really? Okay. You know, I didn't even complain. Like, I didn't, it was just sort of a tired and kind of pained bewilderment. Like, it wasn't even like I was complaining. Sometimes you go, oh, God, I don't want to get up. But I think I was sort of just double-checking. I went, really, honestly, it's now? It's not later. It's now. Now that I'm getting up, and the alarm went, indicating that, yes, it was now. And I went, you're sure? You're sure that I'm getting up now? I didn't misset you. You're positive. I have to get up now. Okay. And then I just, you know, and it was that sort of thing of, you just reached the part where you're like, I guess this is how I feel now. And I just walked down the hallway, sort of shuffling sadly, and fed the dog and stared at a wall for a while and pondered the existence that I was suffering through at that pre-caffeinated moment. And then I had some caffeine, and everything was fine. And so now I am bright-eyed and bushy-tailed once again here at 1:52 p.m. Pacific time. So how about you, Don?
I feel excellent. I feel good. I am starting to get a little weary, but I do feel good. I did get, I got a night's sleep last night, but there is that thing, if you go two nights in a row without, like, really getting enough sleep, one night of sleep doesn't, it's not like you catch up.
You accumulate what they call a sleep deficit.
Yeah. So I'm still a little woozy. But,
and you get to go do ham-fisted radio later on today.
I do. Which will be my 10th show in 3 days. Woo!
Well, you're going to have Scott Daly and Bobby Roberts right there, though. So,
if I nod off, they can just talk to each other.
They'll have to carry the load just a little bit there, so it's going to be...
And I mentioned this on KPAM, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners weren't listening to KPAM this morning, but if you heard yesterday's show, I was...
It was awesome.
It was awesome. And I left here, and I was like, oh, God. I was on the phone before I left during one of... We were playing a song, and I was on the phone calling my doctor's office, returning a call. And they said, oh, yeah, that Vicodin prescription want refilled. You need to come into the office and pick up the prescription. I was like, okay. So, because I need a new paper prescription. So I went... And that, I went to get something. I couldn't find my wallet. Still don't know where it is, by the way. It's somewhere in my house or my car, I think. Don't know where it is. So I didn't have my ID, but I would go to the doctor. I'm like, well, I hope they don't ask me for my ID to pick this prescription up. I go up to the counter. I said, Dawn Taylor, I'm supposed to pick up a prescription. She said, just a second, and made me wait around. And then a nurse came out and said, come back here, please. And I went back, and she took me in a room, and I was like, okay. And she had my chart and the whole thing. And then said, yeah, this was one of these things that they do when you have these prescriptions for...
So you didn't have any ID? You don't have, like, a passport or anything? You were just totally... You just had to show up and go, like, I'm Dawn.
Yeah. And she said, well, I can't pick your ID. And I said, of course I don't, because this is, like, the one day I can't find my damn wallet. And so then she asked me for my birth date and my social security number and my address. So I was able to rattle all of those off. So I guess I was okay. Then she gets a little cup and hands it to me and tells me she needs a urine sample, which I'm like, okay, this has never, ever happened to me before. So as I'm walking down to the bathroom, I said, and what is it that you'll be looking for exactly?
Did you have a moment where you wondered if they had your pee on file?
I don't really, honest to God, had no idea
why they'd
wanted
need a
it.
Urine sample.
My initial thing was I wondered if they were going to look at it and see if, like, I was just all full of marijuana and heroin and stuff.
Right.
They just weren't going to give me anything. But I came out of the restroom and she handed me the prescription thing as she was taking the cup away. But I said, you know, what is it you're looking for exactly? She said, oh, we look to see that you actually have the drug that you're prescribed in your system. So I guess it's to
just
make
from
sure.
Getting somebody else's drugs?
Yeah, so I'm not just getting a big bottle of pills once a month. And then
to put on eBay,
selling them to 12-year-olds or something.
So it's like, because what they probably don't want to do is just go do the justified thing of going and just getting a bunch of guys off the street and going, go in and say you're Ted Lipinski and get his Vicodin. So they want to make sure you are somehow obtaining the drug,
yeah.
Probably through a prescription of some
sure.
kind.
Yeah.
All right. Well.
So I had to do that. And the whole thing was extra surreal because I was so tired. So it was just kind of like, you want me to what? You want... You want me to pee in a cup? Okay, sure.
You probably seemed unbelievably stoned.
Well, that was the other thing. I was so tired, and I didn't have my wallet, and I just went, of all, and then I'm standing there, and I'm in pain, because I've been sitting in, like, weird chairs that I'm not familiar with, you know, for 4 hours every morning, and I'm saying I'm getting a cramp in my leg, and I'm wearing a sweater and a coat, and it's warm in there, so I'm really tired, and I'm getting sweaty. And I realize I'm like shifting from leg to leg, and I'm wiping the sweat off of my face, and I have these huge circles under my eyes. And I'm like, no, I don't have any ID. Give me my prescription. It's like, this is the worst possible time this could be happening to me.
Warming your hands over a fire in a barrel.
You're just picking at things that don't exist on my face because I'm so tired, just swatting at imaginary flies.
Oh, that's fantastic.
God.
That's wonderful. I wish O2 to have been there. Well, maybe next time. That's great. By the way, somebody asked if I put up the picture of the coffee stand. I did. In the KPM studio this morning, there was at one point a coffee stand appeared that I swear to God, and you saw it, and there's a photo up on Twitter
did.
Now. It spelled out the first two letters of the word Bob. It was like it was the studio itself was bleeding coffee and demanding the presence of Bob Miller, although somebody asked, are you sure it isn't demanding an interview with Bo Jackson? And I don't really know the answer.
Or Bo Derek.
Or Bo Derek or Bo Diddley, possibly. Mm-hmm. And you could say he's dead, but hey, if the studio's able to talk, so's Bo Diddley. It was a strange morning. I mean, and a strange yesterday and a strange day before that. I think I mentioned this to you off the air, but the best part is, after we wrap up this show right here now today, you get to go do Ham-Fisted Radio. I get to go tape a bunch of things for Outlook Portland in Beaverton. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
So I get to fight rush hour traffic to Beaverton to sit on camera and go, hi, I'm awake, and look as though I know what I'm doing. And I'm not. Here's the thing: I'm not going to wear pants though, because that's just that's too much work. Because I'll wear pants. I'm just going to wear these pants. Like I'm only going to.
Okay, because I thought it's no more work to wear pants if you're already wearing pants.
To remove my pants.
Yeah.
That's just too much effort. I can't. The buttons are thwarting me.
If it's work you're trying to avoid, just leave the pants on that you've got.
When you see the, I think not this Sunday's, but 2 weeks from now, Alec Portland, and you see me behind a desk going, hi, I'm Rick Emerson. Know that. The fancy dress Rick Emerson, the socially acceptable Rick Emerson with like the jacket and whatever, that's like a waist up thing. Below that, it's just like whatever I happened to schlep into this morning when I woke up to go to the KPM gig. So
I just remember when Sybil Shepherd was doing moonlighting. I don't know why this is always stuck in my head, but I read an interview with her, and then there was a picture accompanying it that in any shot that you see on moonlighting, where her feet are not in the picture, like it's just a one shot or a waist high, mm-hmm. She's wearing sneakers. She said that she never saw any point in wearing like the high heeled shoes that the costumers gave her if they weren't going to see her feet. So she's always wearing just sneakers.
Why not?
And so now, but whenever I see a rerun of Moonlighting, I would think about that. I'd just be watching, like, she's wearing sneakers.
I will say this. I won't say who it was, but I knew a prominent Portland television personality, not Richard Nunn. I knew a prominent television Portland television personality who would occasionally, he said that he would either get there really late. His wardrobe would be, you know, they'd be ironing something or just, you know, something. But occasionally, he said, now and again, there would just be like, you know, he'd be in his dressing room and they go, no, you got to do the tease right now. Get on camera. He'd be like, okay. And so he would just kind of go out and he would be, you know, it would like the shirt and the tie or the jacket or whatever. Nope. You know, but then just like boxer shorts or something. And he would just do sort of a, here I am in my boxer shorts, everyone. And then he would sit down behind the desk. And if you were watching, you would have no idea. But if you were just to duck a little bit to the side, there you go, a bunch of hairy man calf.
And speaking of people on TV, we talked this morning to a guy who's like vice president or something of the Oregon Meteorological Society. And we talked about weather
of
things.
Of the what?
Meteorological Society. Oh, you could barely say it and you were actually talking
to him.
That's
true.
Which apparently you can just join for $7 a month and go to their things. And I'm going to, by the way.
Awesome.
Because it sounds awesome. But also, I figure if I go to these things, I'm one step closer to Sussman.
Yes, we talked to, and I have to apologize. His name is escaping me.
Stephen Pierce?
I believe it was Stephen Pierce. Well done. He was the vice president of the Portland Meteorological Association. He was a great guy. He was sort of great in the way that we like, and that just his, you know. He was just sort of an unabashed kind of nerd about weather and,
he said, can anyone join this? Oh, yes.
We have a grand time. So he was very obviously very cognizant of the station he was on too, because he talked about hewing right down the middle of the line about global warming or climate change. He said, "Well, I'm pretty much straight down the middle myself." You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. Taser Watch coming up. Clown Watch. Job Watch. Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette will be going to be joining us here in just a bit, and so forth. Ooh, but look over there. It's.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
The Oregon House adopted the Code of the West as a standard for the legislature and the state to live by this week. But as so often happens when values and principles are debated in Salem, there was heartfelt disagreement. House Concurrent Resolution 14 proposes a list of 10 common principles from James P. Owen, author of Cowboy Ethics. And that we should adopt this as the statute.
This is what we're spending our time and money on.
Right. That the Code of the West will be the standard for the legislature and the state to live by.
Does this mean I have to go poop behind a scrub of Jimson weed?
I believe we're all supposed to live by these rules now since the state is adopting this. Those common principles are, 1, live each day with courage. 2, take pride in your work. 3, always finish what you start. 4, do what has to be done.
Rotate your tires.
5, be tough but fair. 6, when you make a promise, keep it. 7, ride for the brand. 8, talk less, say more. 9, remember that some things are not for sale. And 10, know where to draw the line.
Someone asks if shoot to kill is going to become the...
Representative Tim Freeman, a Republican from Roseburg and the sponsor of the resolution, said he's been asked why he's wasting time on something like this. He said, because opinion polls indicate people don't think much of their legislature. And I know you all to be good, honest, hardworking people. Even though I may differ on any given piece of legislation, I don't ever question why people are here. This is an attempt to shine a positive light on you and the good people you serve. Some of the House members didn't really appreciate the gesture. One suggested that the Senate amend the bill to include lessons from the book All I Really Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. Representative Sarah Geiser, a Democrat from Corvallis, said that she recognized that this was symbolic. She said, so it doesn't really matter how you vote on them. But with this bill, the symbolism matters absolutely.
I think the symbolism is get to work.
Yeah.
Fix something. I don't know, pave something or knock something down or make something 3 stories taller. Or, you know, just pass it. What if they just did this? Instead of the 10 points of, you know, the cowboy justice or whatever it is that were, you know, whatever it is that were, you know, the know when to hold them, when to fold them law. What if they just, you know, instead of that, just have one. It was like every year we'll find a way to send you $10 in the mail. I think we'd all settle for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just dumb. Here's the other thing about you listen to this list and you sort of, you know, in a Sam Elliott kind of way go, well, that's just kind of, that's the way we should all live. But then at a certain point, it becomes like a motivational thing. Like we're right around ride for the brand.
Ride for the brand.
What's the one after that?
Talk less, say more.
See, that's where,
like something from Who Moved My Cheese or something.
That is totally where they enter the Stephen Covey land of speaking gibberish. That means nothing. That doesn't mean anything.
Well, Representative Geiser
do more with less.
Says she also noted that the bill in the body of the bill, it refers to the Code of the West being that of pioneers, ranchers, cowboys and peace officers.
This is the Code of the West Hills.
Well, and that's exactly it. She said, what about Native Americans? What about those who were here first? She also noted there were times in the Wild West history Oregon probably shouldn't celebrate. She said, confronted with the 15th Amendment giving blacks the right to vote, both California and Oregon balked. What about that was tough but fair?
Yeah.
So, he won, by the way, 44-14, and so the resolution is now moving to the Senate. Your tax dollars at work.
Did he celebrate by going out and firing off a bunch of six shooters at the moon and howling?
Oh.
You know, never mind.
No.
I was going to say, you know who we could probably get on the show for an interview? Just because, since we probably
Sam
could.
Elliott?
No. You know, he lives on the outskirts of
His mother lives in Portland. He grew up here.
Yeah.
He went to high school here.
I think he has a second home. He lives, I think, you know, in several places. But I think somebody he had a home sort of on the outskirts of town by the railroad tracks where the country moon shines.
Another fine mustache, by the way.
I think we could probably get Powers Booth on the show.
Really?
Well, because here's the thing about Powers Booth. He's, as Hunter Thompson said about several presidents, he's liked but not well-liked, meaning you don't know a lot of people who are like, that Powers Booth, I can't get enough of him. I mean, you know, does it strike you like he's a guy who's really, really busy all the time? Probably not.
Well, no, there was this whole period in the 80s when, if you've ever noticed, there almost always there are actors, particularly if they're very, very recognizable actors, and there's a sort of a niche that can only be filled by one actor. And it's like Powers Booth was kind of neck and neck for the same roles as Tommy Lee Jones for a while, and Tommy Lee Jones got them all.
Yeah.
He got all the good ones. And so he became like, just by disassociation, became the poor man's Tommy Lee Jones. And then there was Steve, what's his name, who was in The Stuntman and who played Manson in the TV movie. I can't remember his last name. But he was kind of in the running there too, and he's sort of like the level C, you know, Tommy Lee Jones, Powers Booth.
If you can't get Powers Booth.
If you can't get Powers Booth. Tommy Lee Jones won't take it. Powers Booth won't take it either. Then you go to Steve, whatever his last name is. So, and yeah. So I've always kind of felt bad for Powers Booth because I've always thought that he, you know.
He could have been.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know.
He was awesome in that Jim Jones TV movie.
He was. But here's the thing. It's like, again, it's not like he's a nobody or a has-been or washed up. He works. You know, he's a working actor, gets roles. He's been in some movies. He's in Tombstone, one of our shared. He's also in, he plays Alexander Haig in Nixon. Which I quite like. But you get the sense that you could probably get him on, like if you called his people and were like, hey, we want to find out what he's up to and give him a little promotion, they'd probably say yes.
If we started like a regular kind of a character actor segment on the show, maybe we could just start getting some of these guys and talking to them.
Oh, if only it wasn't too late to get Struther Martin. Oh, well, maybe next time. Here's Don Taylor.
Speakeasies, bootleggers, gun-wielding crime bosses, and tough guy accents pay homage to Las Vegas' mob roots and a pair of new attractions.
Bushwhackers, hornswogglers, bull dykes!
Two new attractions showcasing Las Vegas' criminal history, an interactive attraction featuring gangster memorabilia and commentary from film mobsters James Caan, Mickey Rourke, and Frank Vincent opens Wednesday on the Strip. And Las Vegas Mayor Oscar Goodman, a former mob defense lawyer, plans to launch his Las Vegas Museum of Organized Crime and Law Enforcement later this year. For Las Vegas, the attractions represent an unprecedented embrace of its founders. Goodman said, "What differentiates us from any other city is our history. This is the story of America."
Well, and they sort of, you know, and the thing is they sort of just, they don't run from it. As much as, you know, Vegas is in some ways a very law and order town, you know, and that you can't go whoring and whatnot. I mean, it's still just booze and gambling and whatever.
Yeah.
So Vegas, I mean, and you can whore just a few miles that way. So
we all know that it was Bugsy Siegel and Meyer Lansky who got everything, you know, rolling out there.
Well,
so
that's why, now this is one of the many, many reasons why whenever we go to Vegas, why we make sure to visit and sometimes stay at the El Cortez, which and I have a fine shirt from the El Cortez that I love. If you ever get a chance, seriously, even if you don't stay there, because it's a hotel, staying there is not to everybody's taste. It is sort of the Vegas equivalent of that place I stayed in Manhattan a couple weeks ago. You might not want to let your skin touch any of the exposed clothes, you know, like cloth or bedding there. Maybe, you know, just zip yourself up inside a bag of some kind before you get in the bed. But the El Cortez is a really great place because it's unchanged since the 40s, and it was started by Meyer Lansky. He was one of the original investors and owners of it. It is the last existing, currently operating casino from that era. And it's weird because they got pictures of him just like hanging out in the lobby. It's like you can look over and like there's a chair and a wall, and it's like there's a picture of Meyer Lansky sitting in the chair against the wall. It's just, and I like the fact that Vegas doesn't, that they do embrace that, just like with the nuclear testing museum or whatever. All of which makes it more unconscionable that they blew up the goddamn Sands Hotel, which
is that where the Trump thing, or is that the, or is that Wynn, the Wynn Hotel? Which one ended up being?
I don't know, actually. I don't know. I don't know. I'm assuming it's a Wynn thing. But does it, I mean, because that was just like 10 years ago or something. Does it, in retrospect, is it surprising to you that we didn't all just go form a human chain around it? We refuse if it's a Wynn place. So I don't know why were we all just out of town that weekend? Like as a country, were we just taking a nap? Why did we let them blow up the Sands Hotel? That's just absurd.
I don't know.
I don't understand what we were thinking. I mean, it makes no, I know we don't have much regard for history in this country, but still. I mean, come on. What do you know?
Well, the publicly funded mob museum is going to cost $42 million and will open in December at a downtown Las Vegas courthouse where a detailed mob hearing that helped expose organized crime to Americans was held in 1950. It started as an effort to save one of Las Vegas's few historic buildings. It amassed a wide collection of gangster artifacts, including the wall from Chicago's St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
Wow.
The only gun recovered at that shooting and the barber chair where Albert Anastasio was killed in the 1957 murder.
Really?
Yeah.
I am there. Is it open now?
It opens in December. I'm so going.
Damn it. You know, because here's the thing, because I'm probably going to Vegas over the weekend. My mom turns 75 this year. My mother, who is, as I often say, is sort of a country mouse in the city. My mom has never been to Vegas. And so my wife and I and my brother, my sister-in-law are taking my mother to Las Vegas for her 75th birthday. And that's probably going to be just for a weekend or something, but in July. But I'm going to miss this by a few months.
Well, the thing about Vegas, though, is you can always go to Vegas cheap.
Yeah, that's true.
Flights to Vegas just dirt cheap.
Right now, if you have never gone to Vegas and you want to do it, you do it right now because it's like 60% of what it was.
The other attraction is at the Tropicana, and it's called the Tropicana's Mob Experience. It was recently sued by the daughter of Sam Giancana over a breach of contract involving the purchase of his furniture. But critics have said that the attraction is actually too deferential to the family members of gangsters. The exhibition glosses over the mob boss's violent histories while praising them as handsome fathers. In one room, an actor asks visitors how a petty casino thief should be punished for his crime. During Tuesday's grand opening, the actor said, "Should we use a shovel on him?" to the crowd.
What a strange city.
I know.
This country is really bizarre in some ways.
Some people, unsurprisingly, are a little bit thinking that, maybe glorifying gangsters is not a good thing. But those people can just suck it.
Speaking of which, Don, if we had access to Sam Giancana's furniture, we could probably clone JFK is the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying, him and Judy Campbell both, presumably. But I'm totally – and these are two separate attractions you're talking about right now?
One is in the Tropicana, the mob experience. And then the other one is actually a publicly funded museum.
I love the idea
museum.
That it's publicly funded, too. How about all the crime that happens here? Do it. And it's like a museum to memorialize all of the crime that filled the city.
Well, if you are Las Vegas and you're going, let's have a museum showcasing our history. Okay, that would be the mafia.
Yeah, I mean that's pretty much.
Else have you got?
That's it. I mean, there really is. I am surprised that there isn't, and maybe there is by this point, that there isn't a smallish sort of Rat Pack museum. I've been there when they've had some temporary displays of here's a deck of cards that Frank Sinatra used to deal or whatever. But there is no little exhibit, a permanent exhibit or museum for the Rat Pack, which does surprise me because it's not just the summit shows they had there. But I mean, those guys obviously spent a lot of time in that city and Sinatra, most of all. It amazes me that there isn't something like that. But, what are you going to do? You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Let's do one more. We'll take a break. Come back on the other side.
Well, is Aaron Mesh here? Is he calling? Is he out in the hall? Do we know?
No, he was allegedly going to call, but I think that may have been wait, hold on. Okay, so I think I just opened Skype, I think for no reason, there's just an emoticon here that has a conical party hat and is blowing one of those things, and then there's confetti. I don't know why.
Okay.
And then Cheryl says, this is rather telling, I think, about the whole thing. She says, hey, did Aaron call in yet? So I would imagine we won't be hearing from Mr. Mesh today. That's fine. You know what? We got lots to do. So don't worry.
Yeah. Amazon announced a new music streaming service on Tuesday that's already angered parts of the music industry and may spark a legal battle. The service, called Amazon's Cloud Drive, allows users to play music directly from a web browser or on phones with Android software by using a music locker. Users can store music files on the company's web servers, the lockers, rather than personal hard drives. A spokeswoman for Sony Music, however, said the company launched Cloud Drive without acquiring new licenses for music streaming.
Or the approval of Lando Calrissian.
An executive said, I've never seen a company of their size make an announcement, launch a service, and simultaneously say they're trying to get licenses. Shares of Amazon went up 2.6% after it announced Cloud Drive.
Well, that's like when Apple launched the iPhone, despite the fact that somebody else had a trademark on a thing called an iPhone. And there's this great book you can read about this. It's called Icon. It's about the Steve Jobs and sort of his rise and fall and rise again. They talked about he went out there and he said, and we're unveiling it today. And he takes it out of his pocket. One more thing, blah, blah, blah. Here's the iPhone from Apple. We're going to be selling it in. And they said that you basically do a sort of jump cut to the offices of the guys who invented a thing called the iPhone that, is a phone. And they were just watching TV going, that doesn't say. Don't we sell a thing called an iPhone? Don't we have a trademark? Haven't we had a trademark on that for 5 years? okay. And I mean, that's just like a total job scene thing. He was just like, we're doing it. You know, you're using it wrong. We're going to take it and use it. And I guess they just
What are you going to do? Sue us?
And I think that's what he did. He's just like, hey, if I just announce it, it's got to happen. What are you going to do? And I think they complained, and he went, here's a little money, go away. And they did because they weren't really making much headway with it. So I mean, and seriously, with this, it's like they must know that they're making so much money with iTunes. That if Amazon has some sort of licensing thing in place, you're going to get a lot more money from that. So they're not going to tell – ultimately, they're not going to tell Amazon no. It's not like the old days where the record companies had all the power. I mean, this is where the distributors of the content have the power, and really the record companies are kind of at their mercy. So
I don't know I'm wondering what the paywall is like on that, what the price is or something. Because I'm assuming – because it sounds – obviously, it's something sort of like Pandora.
Well, it's not like
except that it's basically it sounds like you're essentially buying music and then you're storing it offsite, you're storing it in the cloud.
Maybe is it like you can just upload like your own crap to it?
I'm really not sure.
Because then it's just like
calling it a new music streaming service.
Then here's the thing, and I might be accused of brand loyalty here getting in the way of whatever. But then it just sounds like the Napster thing, because you know I got to tell you the Napster service, which is $5 a month. $5 a month. You know, for $5 a month, the Napster service, which is, by the way, if anybody's listening, you know, a lot of the music here, you know, sort of originates from that. It's, I mean, I've talked to you about it before. I mean, it is by and large most new music that comes out, and I very, very rarely is there something that I have a hankering to hear. Like I wanted to hear some obscure Jim Steinman song the other day, and I just went there and bam, done, Jim Steinman, and it started playing out of the thing. So that Napster service, which is fully licensed and legal, and it's run by Bertelsmann, I think, and it's totally above board service now. I have that on my iPhone. Lara has it on her Motorola Android. I have it on this laptop right here. I could, if I wanted to, have it on two other computers and one other handheld device, and I can use that anywhere. I don't have to install the player. I can just do it directly from any browser on any computer anywhere in the country, and I can stream, I can download, I can read, and it's $5. So, I mean, we're really living in a strange time.
I guess that, in a sense, that's similar.
Now, this you can upload your personal music to the cloud drive, though, is the other thing with Amazon,
you're
saying.
And you can access up to 20 gigabytes of your own music from any desktop browser or Android. They provide 5 gigabytes of storage for free. And then once you purchase any album from their MP3 download store, they'll upgrade that to 20 gigabytes. So
I should say, by the way, that I think you can do stuff like that pretty easily already, because that just sounds like some. You know what that sounds like? That sounds like in the early days of the Inertron. We were talking about this yesterday. That sounds like a lot of those online storage lockers people used to rent. You know, where it's like, well, my computer only holds 3 megs. I better buy this. That people forget this, but years and years ago, that is what that is what MySpace.com originally was. MySpace didn't used to be a social networking site. When MySpace first started, it was an online storage locker for stuff that you didn't have room for on your computer. And that's kind of it. And Apple sort of does that now. Apple has this service called MobileMe, which is where you can store your contacts and your whatever. But they also just provide like 10 gigs of just floating space out there that you can access kind of from anywhere. So, I mean, things like this are going to become more and more common, I think.
Well, I'm looking at this. The fellow, a writer for Information Week, actually tried it out because the service launched on yesterday. And said, yeah, he bought an album so that they upgraded his storage. Before allowing me to download my newly purchased music, they asked if I wanted to store it in Cloud Drive instead. I had declined and used the downloader to retrieve the purchase. He says, first of all, there's no option to add the music to the cloud and download it too. Mm. They give you one or the other. Then to play the music in the browser, they have a player, so you have to download that software and install it. To transfer music from your hard drive, they require another download, the Adobe Air-based Amazon MP3 uploader. And he says the file access tool is kind of clunky and very slow to use. And he said basically from start to finish, setting up the service and uploading 1,600 songs took 8 hours. He said that kind of sucks, so why bother?
Here's the thing. I cannot overstate this enough. If you are a music fan, and if you have a laptop, even if you don't, I mean, if you just got a regular desktop computer you sit behind while you're at work or something, if you got a handheld device, I cannot overstate the greatness. And I know, like, Scott Daly uses Rhapsody and he praises Rhapsody, and I'm sure it is similar. I can only speak to Napster because that's what I use. the idea that I would ever again, you know, go to just like, you know, unless it's for, you know, like some collectible thing or a local band where you really want to buy the thing. The idea that I would ever again just care about having a bunch of like physical stuff I'm lugging around. Because again, you could pick me up and you could drop me at anybody's house. You could drop me at the random home of a couple in Tuscaloosa and I could log into their computer and I could listen to nearly anything I could possibly imagine for just the same $5 a month, no matter where I go.
And that is the selling point that this guy says, that it is, there are a lot of drawbacks to it and it is,
but you still
clucky,
have to buy the music.
And
though,
you have to, but he said that, what? You don't have to buy all the music, though.
No, but if there's something else that comes out and you're like, well, I'd love to hear that new Springsteen, like, you still got to buy it from Amazon,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, as opposed
to... So that's like another $10 right there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, to me, it's like, and especially if you're not, and if you're buying it from Amazon, you still don't really have it. It's still just like ones and zeros, and then you're streaming it. So I'm just saying, for me, you know, there are and I'm assuming, again, that Rhapsody has some sort of similar thing where you can just listen to it wherever you go for a flat fee. I love Amazon and all, but I just don't. And plus, man, can we all just agree? Quit making me download other crap to run your crap. If I'm using your service, it should be all inclusive. I should just be able to turn it on or plug it in. You know that flip camera that I've got, which I don't use a lot anymore since I got the iPhone. But still, the great thing about that flip phone is that, you know, it's like the little USB thing is attached to it. And you don't have to load anything or install anything. The software just resides on the camera. And when you plug it into any computer, it just spins up inside the camera and it stays there. You never have to even see it working or you don't have to install it. Same thing with this, the Editorial recorder I've got here. No software of any kind required. With the whole thing, before you can play this movie that you already bought from us, please download the following 75 Microsoft plugins. You know, no, thank you.
Thank you, no.
I do like, though, that we are reaching this point where there are just places out there, the cloud, where we can keep our information or have our information and you know, just don't have to worry about software and physical things.
Right.
And yeah, it's
and
it's
kind of
delightful.
I won't say that I mocked it, but I was saying I didn't really use that stuff. I didn't really see the point of it until, you know, as they always do, Apple kind of, you know, they sort of use the cloud. And I was OK, because they launched this mobile meet thing or whatever. And it's like 20 gigs. It's like, if you know, and it cost me, and it's like $7 a month or something. But it allows me to just access anything from my phone or my computer anywhere I go. And it's all password protected and everything. Plus just like 20 gigs of like whatever that I could get, you know, like if I'm at your house and I'm like, oh, I need that thing that's, you know, that I forgot. And it's, you know, right there. It's kind of like that Dropbox service,
yeah.
You know, where you don't have to be lugging stuff around with you anywhere. Even the idea that you're just going to have one of these around your neck where you have the little jump drive or whatever, which is still great and it's so magical and wonderful, but the idea you don't even have to have that as long as you've got power and a computer somewhere. It's like, well, for me, it was when I was in the New York, and Thomas had told me about this because I sort of knew that it existed, but the idea of just using my iPhone as a mobile internet hotspot so that I didn't have to be like walking around, you know, with one of those like thermometers from ThinkGeek looking for a Wi-Fi signal I could use, or going and sitting in a Starbucks for 9 hours, that anywhere I got phone service, I could immediately be using, have wireless internet access, which is just, that's one of those things where having had that, like, I don't know that I could, I don't know how I got along without it. I really don't. Because how many times you've been like, here's a perfect example. Here's a true story, by the way. So I had to go way, way out to Clackamas the other day, which is always a joy. But I had to go out to Clackamas, and before I left, I had uploaded that day's Rick Emerson show to the FTP site. And I was like, okay, uploaded, done, finished, yes, okay, good. Close my laptop, stick in the bag, get in the car, go to Clackamas. I get to Clackamas, and Thomas sends me a text message. He's like, hey, did you upload today's show? And I said, yes, I did. And he goes, I don't know, the file must be corrupted or something. It's not playing. Nobody can download it. It's not working. And I said, well, I uploaded it all the way. And he's like, I know, but sometimes these things just happen. You know, you need to do it again. And I'm in the middle of nowhere in Clackamas in my car with my laptop. And, you know, literally, I just took my laptop out, plugged it into my phone, and was immediately able to get on the net and uploaded the entire show again from my car in the middle of nowhere, using my iPhone as a mobile internet, like, portal of the gods. I mean, it was really just astounding. And it's like, you just sit there and you just want to find science and just hug it and just go, thank you, science. You make my life so much better. We should take a break.
Okay.
What do you think about taking a break?
Okay,
we'll take a break. Back after this, the Rick Emerson Show.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Here's the thing. Just a second. You get to hear some David Lee Roth. Before you do that, this is like Hulu. Before that, how would you like 29 seconds of commercial? Let's talk about Squires Electric at squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. Somebody says, Squires Electric, don't deal with your cobbled-together wiring at home any longer. All right. See what you did there. Thanks so much.
Am I cobbled?
Yeah. Bye. 503-252-1609 is the phone number for Squires Electric. You can also go online, you know, from the middle of Clackamas or whatever and find out more about them at squireselectric.com. Squireselectric.com. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. They know of what they speak. They know of what they fix, stall, repair, upgrade, install, repair, upgrade, or supervise and inspect for you. And you say, well, why do I want them to inspect something for me? Well, you know what? Maybe you got the inspectors coming out to check out your business. Maybe they're coming to your house. Or maybe
check out your business.
Check out your business. Hey, everybody, check out my business. How about this? I'm not saying this ever happens. Let's say you have an unscrupulous tenant. Not that that ever, you know, mm-hmm. not that that ever takes place. But you feel like, it's not working. I'm not going to pay my rent. This is, you sold me a bill of goods. Nothing, I plug it in and nothing happened. And it's like before you call an electrician, you know, to come out and fix everything, sometimes you want to call an electrician to come and just check it out and just look at it and just tell you straight up, like, yeah, you need a little bit of work done here. Or no, it's fine. Or, that's working. But, hey, you know, this over here, at Squires Electric, here's the thing. They not only know their stuff, but I can tell you, and I will vouch for this to my last breath. I mean, they are good people. It's a great business. They know what they're talking about. And they're not going to charge you for anything you don't need. It's not going to be that thing where, like, hey, I'm sorry, I left a sponge in your alimentary canal. We're going to have to open you up again. They're not going to have to come back and, you know, fixing your stuff 3, 4, 5, 6 times. They're going to do it right. You can do it right the first time. And your house is not going to be a wreck when they leave either. So you contact them at SquiresElectric.com or 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. If it's wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. They are Squires Electric.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
We'll be right back. Zibbly Zibbly Bop.
To the Emerson News Network.
Lost in America.
listening to the Emerson News Network.
Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. Don't forget to join us tomorrow when our guests will include Anna Griffin from the Oregonian, writer of a thrice-weekly column about life in Portland and Multnomah County. And then Friday, Mr. Big Jim Willig will be in the studio with another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. That is coming up. Here's the thing about... I think we might have been talking about this morning, maybe between shows or something, but I... having done... three shows a day for the last, Monday, Tuesday, and then today. And then also, when we get done here, you're doing Hamfisted Radio over at Cascadia.fm at 4 o'clock Pacific time or later at HamfistedRadio.com. And then I'm going to be going to Beaverton to film stuff for Outlook Portland, which is cable channel 3, Northwest 32 TV or OutlookPortland.com. It feels like a Friday. And also, I first had this conversation with last night. Because she said, it's like Wednesday's going to be a long day, for you. Sorry, but, she was just commiserating, that's a drag. And I said, the weird thing is, Wednesday feels like Friday. And after this, it's like swinging multiple bats in the on deck. Because now, Thursday and Friday, two shows, do that in my sleep.
I don't have to be at work until, 11.
I don't even feel like it's going to take any effort at all through the next 2 days.
Yeah, I think I mentioned to you, the weirdest things is getting up at 4:30 in the morning to work. I get up in the morning. My husband gets up and he goes to a real job. And I get up in the morning and I have coffee. And I sit and I work and I gather news all morning. I'm usually actually sitting down and working by somewhere between 8 and 9 o'clock, But the thing is, this week, getting up at 4:30 to be at that studio for a show that starts at 7.
Yeah.
And then doing 4 hours of that and then just kind of feeling, ugh, that was the work day.
Well,
and then
I'm
driving
done.
Here and... coming into the building here and realizing, and this is the time I'm here every day.
I got to start it all over again.
Ugh. No, but it's just that surreal thing of I've already done a day's work, and now I'm here to start my normal work day at the time I always do.
Yeah, no, it's a strange. Well, and working. And I know that 7 to 11 a.m. is not, that early because a lot of people, do that sort of thing. But it was, but for me at least, because I haven't done – I'm not much of a morning guy. But it's like we were doing the KOFO thing and I was up at 3 in the morning to be on at 5. And you're just going, what is – it's so weird. And it's like you never – and here's the thing is, if it sucks, if you go to do a morning show, and your first few weeks or days in, it blows. Here's a little secret. It never gets any better. You either adjust to that immediately or it never, ever, ever changes. However you feel after 2 weeks of doing that, that's how you're going to feel about it forever.
Yeah, the first day we did this, I got up and I did it. It was hard to get up, but by the time I left the house and did stuff and was everything was fine. Yesterday, I get up and I get the coffee and I do the work and I get out of the house. And Patrick says, oh, I'll carry that to the car for you. I'm like, all right, fine. And we walk out the door and I walked out. I swear to God, we just walked out the door and I went, it's still dark. I just heard it come out of my mouth, just the snottiest, whiniest thing ever.
Well, because I think, if I remember correctly, I'd said, Monday you're tired, but you have the strange adrenaline that comes with doing the new thing and it's whatever. And also it's you're getting up so early and you're so tired that in a weird way, you sort of get energized from that because it's you almost... because you kind of get freaked out at how tired you are, but then the result of that is you get the adrenaline rush. You're like, oh, God, I'm never going to be able to make it through today. I'm so exhausted. What am I going to do? And then you get the panicking energy of now I'm awake. And then the second day, though, is when it kicks your ass. The second day, because all of the first day adrenaline has burned off and you're just like, oh, that's where you just wake up and you go, why? But then the third day, you're either adjusting or you're... or it's that thing again of the third day where you're so tired that you go into giddy energy, where you just sort of you've just gone a little loco, and everything is just sort of funny and exciting because of that. News.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
I am in stage 3, by the way, Renan, because everybody was curious.
I can tell. Yeah. A new smartphone application prevents you from sending text messages while driving. Dr. Jacob De La Rosa, the Rhode Island heart surgeon who developed the app, says he saw too many people injured and killed from distracted driving.
I'm sorry. This is a thing I have to play here. Hold on a second.
Yeah.
And
if somebody can be saved from being in an accident, a life can be saved. That's really what we're working for.
Roy Montgomery of Pocatello says, it's about time.
Who of where?
I don't know. That's just what it says. Roy Montgomery of, you know, Roy Montgomery of Pocatello.
Yes, at this point, we are only hopeful that the regulators will give us some clarity about their expectations, and then we can plan on that basis.
Okay. It was either that or the
crazy, because, first of all, why would you buy parts from in Japan when you're supposed to keep it in the United States anyway? That's how, I mean, so common sense. I hope they're up there saying, a duh.
I'm sorry. Who from Pocatello?
Roy Montgomery.
I have two grandkids, and they're all texters, you know, so I worry about that all the time when they're on the road. You know, are they doing this in a safe manner?
That shouldn't sound ridiculous when he says texters, but it is. That's just one of those texters sounds like something that the school secretary would believe to be the name of a social clique somewhere in the school that wouldn't quite be accurate.
Okay. Well, we have a very special clown watch.
Okay, hold on a second. Let me just. Here we go. You're very special. Is it really very special? Oh,
it's
it
a
is.
Very special
I know
clown
exactly
watch.
What this is. Okay. By the way, you want to be near a. You probably want to be near a computer for this one. So if you have a chance, if you're near a computer, maybe smartphone, whatever it is you got, if you can get on the internet during this clown watch, it is safe for work. It's unnerving, but it's safe for work. I'd get near a computer right now. This is your clown watch for Wednesday in the Rick Emerson radio program. Dawn Taylor.
Well, last night, tired and completely worn out by my many adventures, I was going to bed and had taken a nice warm bath, read a book, got into bed, and then with my phone, as I was getting ready to go to sleep, I texted to the world at large, I'm going to finally get some, really truly get some sleep. Good night, Twitter, I said. Good night, moon. Good night, scary clown that lives under my bed. And mere moments later,
that was the tweet?
That was my tweet.
Okay, all right.
Good night. I figure I'm being clever. Good night, scary clown that lives under my bed.
All right.
And just a couple of minutes later, my phone dings to tell me that someone has mentioned me on the Twitter. I've gotten a response to something. And scary_clown at Twitter said, Dawn Taylor, good night to you too.
That's fantastic.
And a couple of minutes after that, just typed, about to hit the sack, a.k.a. under Dawn Taylor's bed. And so I went and I looked, and right after I typed my thing about Scary Clown, Scary Clown started a Twitter account.
Okay, Scary Clown. scary_clown at Twitter.
scary_clown.
And, oh, my God.
And for location, it just says under Dawn Taylor's bed.
And then for the profile statement, it says, "I'm a very scary clown. Also, I live under the bed, Dawn."
Yes. Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Later, Scary Clown tweeted, "Next time on Clown Watch, the clown watches you."
Okay, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. I don't know who that is. Reversal, that's genius. Congratulations, sir, madam. That is that's wonderful.
And then today, Scott Daly tweeted that he would be on Hamfisted Radio with me and Fatboy Roberts on Cascadia. And Scary Clown noted, "I'll give it a listen." So I apparently have my own personal scary clown.
That's great. Okay. Where did this picture of the clown come from?
I don't know. It's horrible. I'm looking at it right now.
That's deeply unnerving.
It's just horrible.
It really is. I mean, it's... It's not a thing that should exist.
Oh.
All right, I have to. You know what I'm trying to find right now? Actually, just just for grins, I'm trying to find the original bed that almost became The scary clown bed. That's the one we went with. There was something that we almost used as the bed for the clown watch, and I'm trying to find it right here. I'll see if I can dig it up for the end of that. I have to close this Twitter thing. Normally, I'm not weirded out by the clown images that get sent to us. I mean, sometimes they're a little odd, but I think it's that, and it's the double the 1-2 punch of location. You know, under Dawn's bed, and then it just says, "I'm a scary clown. Also, I'm under the bed, Dawn."
I know.
Ed. Oh my God.
Oh, the scary clown would also like you to note that they all float down here, except for sometimes they sink. Okay, thank you so much. I'll see if I can dig up this other way. I think this. Oh, this may be it. This may be it. I'm not quite sure. I think this might be what was almost the clown watch bed. So if I can get this to play a little ad hoc. Hold on a second. See if I can. Yeah.
Oh wow.
This was almost the clown watch bed.
Oh, wow, that's gorgeous and horrible. And
here's
creepy.
What this is going to be now. This is going to be the bed every day during which we read the tweets from the evil clown, from the scary clown to Dawn. Just, you know, so you can get a little preview for that. There we go. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. Here is Dawn Taylor.
President Ronald Reagan was shot in Washington 30 years ago today. It happened just as he was leaving the Washington Hilton Hotel following a speech. After initially thinking Reagan was unhurt in the gunfire, the Secret Service quickly realized he was bleeding. Special Agent Drew Unruh made the call over the dispatch radio that the president was being taken to the hospital instead of back to the White House.
All right, do we want to go to the emergency room of George Washington? That's a roger.
You know, what I never realized is until I saw this story today, because I was however old when this happened. I mean, I remember it, but I don't remember it that well or whatever. What I did not realize until I saw this story is that the season 2 opener of The West Wing almost certainly was lifted from this exact sequence of events, because there's the season 1 ends with Bartlett being, you know, there's an assassination attempt. You don't know who's been shot. There's been some sort of a gunfire, but you know who's been hit. Season 2 opens with Bartlett in the limo going back to the White House with Ron Butterfield, head of Secret Service, and you think everything is fine. And then at one point, Bartlett says, "Oh, you know, my God, I'm so glad everybody got away safe." And as he's talking, he's just like a little trickle of blood comes out of the corner, and the Secret Service agent does this thing of reaching inside his jacket and feeling around, and then he brings his hands out, and they're covered in blood. And he shouts this thing of, like, GW now. He goes, like, GW, like code blue or whatever. And the limousine whips around in traffic, and then they do the most amazing thing of cutting to GW Hospital and showing, which is in real life, the hospital that is set aside as, like, the place they take the president, and showing what happens when, like, the red phone rings because the president's coming in. And I was reading this description this morning. It was, like, the New York Times or something where they talked about it. It was the same thing. Reagan was on the way back, and they thought he was fine. And then suddenly a Secret Service agent looks at, which has got to be just the worst. That's got to be one of the most terrifying moments of your life, especially if you're a Secret Service guy, where it's like your sole job is to keep the president alive. And you look down and you just see blood coming out of the president. I mean, that's got to be a moment where you just, I can't even imagine what that feels like. I mean, that's just, and not even because it's like, and not even in like a sort of in the line of fire way, like, oh, damn it, you know.
No, just more like a worst day ever.
Well, because, and especially because it's got to be, and here's the other thing about it. Like, it's because that is like, that's your one thing. And so it's that. There's some jobs where you go to work and you do what you do. There are some jobs, though, where it's like you train eternally for a thing that you will probably never have to do. You have one job that you'll probably never have to actually execute. You know, like your whole job is to turn the key. You know, your whole job is to go pick up a guy and drop him in a well somewhere. You know, your job is to, you know, get the president to the hospital because he's been shot and he's bleeding. And so that moment of the scenario that you have run a million times, is actually happening. That must just blow your mind.
And then there's stories like, was it Johnson, the Secret Service agents, after the JFK assassination, and everybody was keyed up and running around, and the Secret Service agent who pulled his gun and almost shot Lyndon Johnson?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he came around a corner and supposed to be there, and he pulled his gun.
Yeah, pulled his gun.
And always for the rest of his life realizing, oh crap, I almost shot Lyndon Johnson.
I mean, I can't even imagine. You know, that's I can't even imagine like what the physiological changes that happen in your brain the instant you look down and you see Reagan bleeding in the limo with you. I mean, that's just because you think, I mean, especially in 19, what was it, 80?
Well, it's 30 years ago, so it was 80. It was 80.
80, so 1980.
Yeah.
81. Were you, because that's not just that Reagan's been shot. That's where you start to think everything like, are we under attack? Are we at war? Is this like, who was the shooter? Is this like, you know, is this the beginning of the end? Or, you know, it's like the Soviets invading. I mean, it's just like, it's all that stuff that must go through your head.
Yeah. David Gergen made the first initial announcement at the White House that the president had actually been hit.
The president was shot once in the left side this afternoon as he left the hospital, as he left the hotel.
Afterwards, Secretary of State Alexander Haig made infamous comments attempting to clear up the confusion.
As of now, I am in control here in the White House, pending return of the vice president.
I am
in
king!
Close touch with him. If something came up, I would check with him, of course.
Yeah. P.S. Not so much, really.
Wow.
That wasn't really you.
You know, he just waited his entire life to say those words. Yeah, now it is me that you must obey. Wow. I'm going to hear that one more time. That's
As of now, I am in control here in the White House, pending return of the vice president, and in close touch with him. If something came up, I would check with him, of course.
Wow. That's just, that, you know... Everybody in power must have the strangest set of mixed feelings, you know, when, like, you know, the line of succession looks like it suddenly might move up one notch, you know?
That was one of the things I really, really loved about Battlestar Galactica, though, with the character that who's the Secretary of Education and them
becoming the teacher?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Say, ma'am, everyone above you is dead.
Yeah.
So you're leader of, well, it's not really the free world anymore because it's gone, but... your leader, what's left?
Yeah, she was. I thought she was a teacher, but she was the Secretary of Education. And it's like everybody had been killed, you know, and it's like, well, I guess, you know, because I saw a list one time of like, you know, it goes like President, Vice President, Speaker of the House. And honestly, I don't know where it goes from there. But eventually you do get to like, you know, Secretary of Corn, you know.
And that'd just be horrible. It's, you know, it's like, so who's in charge now? Well, that would be you.
Yeah. And you just go,
no,
I don't know. What I'm doing.
I haven't been prepared for this.
That's wonderful.
As of now.
This is Al Haig who was saying this?
Yes, Al Haig.
Al Haig, wasn't he booted out not too long after that for like taking big bags of money across his desk? good times. Just a little FYI, everybody. We're going to wrap a little bit earlier than we normally would today because we don't love you. We're going to bring the curtain down here a little bit earlier than we would normally. Try not to hate us too much. A couple things. Don's going to get over to do Ham-Fisted Radio at Cascadia.fm. Also, I think we're probably reaching some sort of a burn factor with the ability to wrap in there for you to go do that, you know, just without just completely falling into a puddle of goo and me, you know, inadvertently sideswapping a busload full of kids on the way to the Beaverton. So also because Greg and Sarah are going to get in here in just a bit anyway, we want to make sure we can get done here so get out of, you know, so we're not in their way. So we'll do like a couple more here, and we'll wrap it for today. But tomorrow, back to our normal shenanigans with Anna Griffin for the Oregonian, and then Friday, Mr. Big Jim Willing. Here is Don Taylor.
Let's do our job watch.
Here is your job watch. I say looking for it because I know it's lurking around here somewhere. Wait, no. Well, now wait a minute. Now, normally when I say it's around here somewhere, and then I look for, and then it like it actually is around somewhere, but it appears to have just vanished. Hold on a second. Let me look one more time. Wait. No, that's a different kind of job. That's a...
Well, just for today, though. That could be...
Okay, we'll just... That's the weirdest thing. There's a big gap on the soundboard where the job watch should be. Okay.
Employee loyalty is at a 3-year low, but many employers are precariously unaware of the moral meltdown, according to a study out today. While frustrated workers are griping, groaning, and secretly sending out resumes, employers think they are just as loyal as they were 3 years ago. MetLife reports in its 9th annual study of employee benefits trends that businesses are understandably focused on expenses, but they're taking their eye off the ball with human capital issues, notably what drives employee satisfaction and loyalty.
This news all sounds strangely weird and hilarious with the Hogan's Heroes bit underneath. We're not saying that MetLife are Nazis, by the way.
Morale fell
and
stress levels skyrocketed as cost-cutting employers froze wages, slashed bonuses, and asked workers to assume the duties of laid-off colleagues during the downturn. 4 in 10 employees say the heavy workload Unrealistic job expectations and long hours have created
stress. And I am expected to invade Poland and the Soviet Union at the same time. It's madhouse.
And so now these unhappy workers of the state are seeking greener pastures. Slightly more than one in three hope to find a new job in the next 12 months. Employees are starting to sniff out the possibility of an economic recovery, and they're getting antsy, this fellow says. In the past, they were happy to keep their head down in the we were just lucky to have a job economy. And now 4 in 10 self-employed full-time and part-time workers believe it's likely they'll find a job that maxes their experience and salary in the next 6 months.
Oh, God, really? We're just barely like trying to see the edge of the hole so we can crawl out of it and immediately ready. Let's quit our jobs, everyone.
I've only been holding on to this horrible, horrible job because I had to. But now they're promising me things are going to get better. And so I am so totally looking for something else now. And it will be a brighter future, a better tomorrow.
Okay.
We will be stronger, braver, more loyal to those in command. All hail America!
And you know every Otter Pop flavor, by the way.
I do.
There's your job watch for Wednesday on the Rick Emerson radio program. It's a pity we didn't bring this with us this morning. This perfect way to close out our three-day sojourn over there at KFAM. I can just see Bob Miller coming back. They did what? With what kind of music? Nazis. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. I think on that note, we'll just end the things here. So, yes, we're going to be ending things a little bit earlier than we normally would. So, Rick Emerson regrets whatever perceives shirt changing might be taking place. But I...
Let's face it. It's not like you haven't had plenty of opportunity to hear us this week.
Really, honestly, that's part of it. Really, there's been probably more Rick and Don than most people want.
If you feel like you're being shirt changed of our chat... At this point, then you have no one but yourself to blame.
And really, you have no one but yourself in your life, period, if that's true. Because there's, I think there's just been, clinically speaking, too much of us. I mean, really, I think we've passed the scientific point of saturation with this. So tomorrow we'll be joined by Oregonian columnist Anna Griffin, who writes a thrice-a-week column about life in Portland and Multnomah County. Friday, Mr. Big Jim Willig with another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. Coming up about an hour from now, Cascadia.fm, 4 p.m. Pacific time, Don Taylor along with Bobby Fatboy Rob. Today, joined by Scott Daly as well from Geek in the City Radio for Hamfisted Radio, Cascadia.fm, or at hamfistedradio.com, so forth. Don't forget, after a brief musical interlude, we'll have an encore of this very fine radio program, followed by an encore of, I guess we'll stop and reverse that. After a brief musical interlude, an encore of Legion of News, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon, at the news desk. It's Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, buffered up by Mr. Thomas Killig. Executive producer Bruce Agle, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa, and so forth. We'll find out what the crossed wires were with Aaron Mesh and try to sort all that out. In the meantime, in between time, the Rick Emerson radio program made possible by a generous grant from y'all. So thank you for listening. Continue to spread the word. It never, ever, ever goes unappreciated. So thank you kindly, my friends, neighbors, and Romans and countrymen. It is Wednesday, March 30th, 2011, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. As always, thank you for listening. Be safe. See y'all tomorrow. Bye now.